The features of this technologically based fascist theocracy that I see evolving as the system of government in the world to come, again, grows out of what I see as the fundamental, irrevocable conflict between the needs of the individual and the needs of the planet itself, and the perceived short-term needs of the corporate state, i.e. maximized profits. I do not think that this growing number of people on this earth and the system which seeks greater and greater profits are going to be able to find a satisfactory resolution, or satisfactory from the standpoint of basic decent civilization. Rather, I think the resolution, and there will be a resolution, will be an extremely catastrophic one. I think that we are headed for a planet-wide and species-wide catastrophe of unprecedented and, to most people, frankly, unimaginable proportions. What is coming is going to be a tragedy that is going to make the excesses of the Third Reich look like a kindergarten. In fact, the excesses of the Third Reich, in many ways, could be viewed as something of a dress rehearsal for the world to come. The course of human behavior, and indeed the basic motivation of the human animal, and here again is a portion of tonight's talk in which I'm going to be addressing some very large and profound realities, and doing so in a much smaller period of time than they really should be addressed. So once again, this might seem a little facile, and I will ask your indulgence under the circumstances because of that. Psychologists view human life itself as being governed by and driven by, well, really a great many things, but above all else, two principles. Those principles are basically the pleasure principle and the reality principle. To make a very long story very short, the pleasure principle and the reality principle interact. They are very closely related. The reality principle, well, let me start with the pleasure principle. Well, basically, it's a simple concept. What the pleasure principle entails is that people will do what makes them feel good. Now, that seems like a pretty simple thing to grasp. Obviously, you do what makes you feel good. You'll sit in a nice, comfortable chair. You will not hold your hand over a blowtorch. Okay, the one hurts. That will not feel good. Sitting on a nice soft couch or eating a nice meal or enjoying a nice day in the country, that's a nice thing. You will seek to do what makes you feel good. All creatures do this. If you take a rat, you put it in a Skinner box, and on the one side of the Skinner box is a plate of food. On the other hand is a grid in which you administer electric shocks. The rat is going to go for the food rather than the electric shock. It's going to do what makes it feel good. It will also do, at least up to a point, what sustains it on this earth. What the reality principle entails is basically doing, acting in concert with one's environment in such a way as to realize the pleasure principle. Now, if you're sitting in a room, and again, this is something of an oversimplification, if you're sitting in a room and there's something in the room that annoys you, say, just by way of example, each of you were sitting on a sharp tack, okay? The pleasure principle is going to motivate you in such a way as to eliminate that pain. That is literally a pain in the expletive deleted under the circumstances, okay? The reality principle will drive you to basically find some way of removing that irritation. Since sitting on that sharp tack is painful, since you are governed by the pleasure principle, you're going to do something to avoid the pain of sitting on that tack. In most cases, you're going to get up and you're going to remove the damn thing from the seat of your pants. I guess you could say that would be the plan of attack under the circumstances. In the corporate state, they're going to have to figure out, and I think they are already figuring out, ways of convincing you that instead of getting up and removing that tack from your derriere, you are going to have to learn to enjoy that tack. Something is going to have to be done to get you to keep sitting on that tack because, and to extend the metaphor, to develop the metaphor, that tack really is death instead of taxes. That represents what the corporate state requires, which is minimizing your compensation and consequently what you are going to be able to do in terms of acquiring creature comforts, education, housing, clothing, shelter, whatever. The less they are able to compensate you for your labor, then the more profitable things are going to be for them and for the corporate state in the short run. By the same token, the less they have to devote towards cleaning up the environment, and we are in bad shape right now. If we do not change the direction we're moving in, I think barring moving out into space, which I think eventually we will attempt to do successfully or otherwise, we are dead meat. We are basically fouling our nest, and we will pay. We're already paying for that, but we will pay dearly in the future. Since it is in the interest of the corporate state to keep you sitting on that tack, they are going to have to find some way of getting you to accept sitting on that tack. And it is by way of convincing humanity to stay seated on that tack that the system of government or the system of social administration that I see coming will evolve. And that will involve the interaction of a number of different things to basically convince you to stay seated on the tack. A number of things are already being done, and I think are likely to be done to a greater extent in the future, to make you feel that you have no choice but to sit on the tack. Now, obviously in the short run, some of the things that are being used to convince people to sit on the tack, these are things that are already in evidence, and I think we can assume that these things will continue to exist, that they will be heightened and refined in the world to come. Now, on the one hand, the media and the educational system itself are used to convince people that, in fact, what is bad is good. People are propagandized and misinformed. They're told by Mount Limbaugh, for example, that in fact the ozone layer is not really disappearing and that it's okay to cut down rainforests and that really there's nothing to worry about. This is a way of telling you, hey, listen, don't worry about that sensation in your derriere. That is really something good. It's just all those liberals and those Democrats and all those sissies who are convincing you that that is a bad feeling. It's really a good feeling, and it's all American. You should learn to love it. That is not a sharp pain from a piece of metal stabbing into your flesh. That's called conservatism. That's called good government. So keep sitting on that tack and learn to love it, because it's really a good thing. By the way, I heard a really nice comedian's observation about Mr. Limbaugh. He was comparing Rush Limbaugh with the Hindenburg, and said, but of course, it is unfair to compare a flaming Nazi gas bag with a magnificent airship. So I think that is something we should bear in mind. But the media are used to propagandize us. We're told that Mobil Oil and Exxon, they don't really pollute the environment. You'll see a nice little thing with a bunch of little koala bears, you know, and they live on a little Chevron refinery somewhere and, you know, way the hell out in Australia. And, you know, do people really set up things in such a way as this little cutesy koala bear can climb up this tree? Yes, people do. It's Exxon, you know, nice fuzzy little Exxon like your fuzzy little teddy bear. So don't worry about it when the refinery down the road blows up or pours poison into your kids' Wheaties. It's really a good thing. Just think about that little koala bear that we're saving down in Australia. And don't worry about the medical bills you're paying for your child's cancer care. It's really okay. The educational system functions in a similar fashion. People go to college. They are not told about the corporate state. They're not told about how Henry Ford and Allen Dulles and John Foster Dulles and Standard Oil of New Jersey and International Harvester and AT&T and an awful lot of other things that provide for the world they live in supported Hitler. They supported Mussolini. They thought it was great. They liked the corporate state. They're told no. Instead, you know, once upon a time there was a bad man named Adolf Hitler who hypnotized all the Germans and made them all go crazy, and they had a big war, and then along came the Allies and made everything wonderful again, or everything would have been wonderful again, but along came another bad man named Joseph Stalin, hypnotized all the Russians, made them all go crazy, and then they had the Cold War, but we won that too, just like we won World War II, so everything is wonderful. Eat your Wheaties with the petrochemicals in them, and don't worry about a thing. In addition to the educational system and the media, various religions, not all of them necessarily, but religion also contributes substantively to the the creating of a society in which people can be convinced to sit on the tack. And I think that what we're going to be seeing in the future is a system in which a number of the things that we are seeing now and the things that we are seeing some of now and are going to see a whole lot more of later are going to be used to convince us to sit on the tack. Another way, of course, of convincing people to sit on the tack, if people don't like the idea of sitting on a sharp tack because it hurts, then you have some 6'5", 320-pound guard with a submachine gun and a hot a furnace full of hot irons and a rack to convince you that you may not like sitting on that tack, but there's something much, much worse. So keep sitting on the tack or we'll take you up here and we'll burn you with hot irons, which is going to feel a whole lot worse than that. In other words, intimidation, totalitarianism, fascism, totalitarianism put to work at the service of the corporate state. I think intimidation, raw intimidation, and intimidation by induction will be used. Certainly they're being used now, and they will be used in the world to come to assure that people stay seated on the tack. If you yourself may not be facing Big Alfredo with his submachine gun and his hot irons, you will have seen what happened to, if not your next-door neighbor, somebody down the block who tried to get up off the tack and instead was beaten within an inch of their life, had their arms and legs broken, and then were tortured with hot irons, and then had their kids taken away to an orphanage. So that you will not be inclined to do the same thing. As bad and as painful as sitting on that tack may be, there's something worse, and this will be made quite clear to you. So stay seated on the tack and enjoy it. I think that another very important factor in getting people to sit on the tack, and this is something that I think we are seeing now and we're going to be seeing a lot more of as the world develops, and that is religion itself. I found it very significant that Deborah Saunders in that column, and she is right-wing as hell, she's very, very conservative, that she focused on the comments of two ministers basically endorsing the drift towards mass extermination, which we are witnessing in this society. Another very good way of getting people to stay seated on the tack is to convince them that suffering is a blessing. That the longer they sit on that tack and the fewer tears they shed from a lifetime of sitting on that tack, the greater will be their chances of getting into heaven. That even though it might hurt sitting on that tack, don't worry about it because eventually some deity or some higher interest ultimately will reward you for sitting on that tack. The old labor movement in the early part of the century, we refer to that as pie in the sky. There'll be pie in the sky by and by. So don't worry basically about the fact that you're getting reamed out. I think, are witnessing to a certain extent at least a manifestation of this technologically enhanced fascist theocracy already. Here in the United States, one of the foundations of the quote new right unquote, it's really the old right, it's really Mussolini's corporate state, however with a happy face painted on. One of the foundations of the power base of Newt Gingrich, Bob Dole and company is the Christian right. People are being told basically that it's okay to despoil the environment. In fact, James Watt, Ronald Reagan's first Secretary of the Interior, when asked about what he planned to do about all the pressing problems that were besetting the earth, about the problems which threatened to destroy human life later on in the century if they weren't corrected, and he said, well, you know, gee, basically, I can't remember his exact words. He said, basically, well, Jesus is going to be coming anyway, so the world is going to end, so why worry about the environment? In the Santa Clara Valley, the much ballyhooed Silicon Valley, which is where I live and work, there is a very large population of born-again Christians, and this is not in any way to belittle any individual or their religion. I'm going to extrapolate from reactionary Christianity in just a minute and extrapolate from that even more later in the discussion. But there are a lot of born-again Christians in the Santa Clara Valley, which also, not incidentally, is the epicenter of the defense electronics industry. That is an area that was so strategically sensitive in the 1980s that no Soviet citizen was allowed within a 40-mile radius by our intelligence services. My nickname for it was not the Silicon Valley, but the Valley of the Shadow of Death. because the defense industry was basically what the Santa Clara Valley was all about. In the early 80s, I had a second job in addition to my regular day job, but working part-time at a retail outlet. And there was a woman who used to come in frequently with her family and her kids to buy this, that, and the other thing. And she worked at Lockheed Missiles and Space in Sunnyvale, which manufactured, among other things, the internet, the ICBMs for the Trident submarine. And she used to come in. She was a serious born-again Christian, was always handing out prayer cards and quoting scripture and trying to convert me or anybody else who would listen. And most often, not always, but most often, she would, at least during the cooler weather, she would wear a Trident windbreaker. In other words, on the back it would say Trident in big, bold, yellowish-orange letters, and it was a blue windbreaker. And here she was. It was a very grotesque spectacle to me. Here she was talking about the Prince of Peace and espousing world Christian fellowship while she was advertising on the back the product of her employer, which was a device which would destroy, if ever used, would destroy all human life on this earth. I've forgotten how many cities each Trident submarine could destroy, but one Trident submarine, I think, could destroy every major city in the Soviet Union. Those were some awesome weapons that those things were sporting and are sporting. And when one considers that one of the commandments or one of the edicts that the Christians are supposedly adhering to is what God hath wrought, let no man tear asunder. And here are these people busily earning their livings, building machines that would tear everything God, quote, wrought, unquote, asunder. And I asked her about the conflict, or what I obviously saw as a conflict, between worshiping the Prince of Peace and yet advertising the gods of war on one's across one's back. And she saw no conflict whatsoever. She said, well, these are the last days, you know, so it really isn't going to matter. If there's a nuclear war, it really won't matter because, you know, Jesus is coming back. That is how you get people to sit on the tack, folks. If you convince them that there is a higher meaning to sitting on that tack, and if they sit on that tack long enough, then they'll become saints. We are also seeing something, by the way, as has been the case frequently in past lectures. We're honored this evening by the presence of a very fine human being and a very stalwart political crusader, someone that I think is perhaps in a position to appreciate some of what I'm saying better than most, namely Farah Mansour, a very heroic member of the Iranian resistance who has done landmark work on the Islamic fundamentalist movement, primarily in Iran but also elsewhere. And Farah's research has pointed out, and I think made the case inarguably, that despite the appearances to the contrary, the United States and Britain, as well as to a lesser extent Germany, had actually backed the fundamentalist Muslims who are in power in Iran and elsewhere, and that reactionary fundamentalist Islam, like reactionary fundamentalist Christianity, has received the good blessings and the active, tactical, and strategic support of the very same national security and corporatist elements in this country that really lie at the core of the corporate state that I'm talking about. And the conditions under which people live in areas where the Islamic fundamentalists have achieved power, well, those conditions are horrible. And it is my opinion, and by the way, perhaps during the question and answer session, Farah can he can elaborate on this or disagree with me if he does, but I think that in areas of the third world, I think Islam is being envisioned as a force similar to reactionary Christianity. Convince the peasantry that wretchedness is a blessing and that their real reward will lie in the next lifetime. You can get them to acquiesce and basically spend a whole lifetime sitting on that tack, or perhaps even prostrating themselves on that tack in the direction of Mecca five times a day. Beyond that, I think there is an indication that yet another form of religion may very well be utilized to help get us sit on the to sit on that tack. By the way, I want to stress that I'm not dumping on anyone's individual religious preferences. I take every individual and every individual's religious views as they come. So when I talk about the New Age, it's a very broad term and it applies to a lot of different things. I don't want people to take this personally, but I have a fair amount of experience with New Age culture, which oddly enough is very prevalent in the Santa Clara Valley, just as is born-again Christianity. One of the radio stations I work at in the Bay Area in particular has a very large New Age contingent and plays a lot of New Age music and has a lot of New Age talk shows. And the New Age itself, it's a very broad term. One could perhaps, in fact, some people would see things as relatively conventional as yoga or acupuncture as being, quote, New Age, unquote. I'm rather talking about some religious and, quote, spiritual, unquote, orientations, which I think are at best questionable and which I think beyond that represent something of an antechamber, some of them anyway, to fascism. We should not lose sight of the fact that Nazism itself had a very strong degree of overlap with the occult. In fact, the inner core of the Nazi Party per se evolved from a pan-German occult society called the Thule Society, and that at the inner core of the SS philosophy was an explicit occult, an anti-Semitic, pan-German occultism. There are strong elements of the occult which are explicitly fascistic or at the very best proto-fascistic. I have seen a degree of overlap, and in fact Arianna Huffington embodies that overlap between a New Age religion and outright fascism, and indeed Ms. Huffington, whom I'm making a point of addressing very politely if this lecture should ever be played on the air. Ms. Huffington is a very interesting individual. I would note that the same reactionary Christians who should be totally rejecting someone of who's been following John Roger were very comfortable that she, in fact, was a sister in Christ. I think there is a fair amount of overlap between some elements of the New Age religious and philosophical movement and things which could be at best described as proto-fascistic. Beyond that, I've seen in my own experiences with some New Age philosophy not only a proto-fascist orientation, but a dangerously unrealistic orientation, which I think, again, is something that would incline a human being towards remaining seated on that sharp tack and convincing themselves that, in fact, it was very, quote, spiritual, unquote, to sit on that tack and to deny oneself, perhaps. There was a talk show on the same radio station in Northern California that I work on, and they were having some charlatan, frankly, on there, and it was a New Age call-in talk show, and they were kicking around a bunch of BS, and one caller, to his credit, called up the host and this jerk that he had as a guest. And the basic thrust of the discussion was that we're headed for a golden age, and in the next century we're all going to live in a golden age and everything is going to be wonderful. By the way, strong elements of fascism, an Italian Nazi philosopher named Julius Ebola specifically saw the end result of fascism as a, quote, golden age, unquote, in which human existence would be so purified that people wouldn't even have to think. They could just wish things true. This is very similar to some elements of New Age philosophy and New Age religion. Anyway, the thrust of this show was that we're all headed to a golden age and that everything is going to be just wonderful. And a guy called up and said, what do you mean we're headed for a golden age? Things are horrible. He said, look at all the horrible things around us. How about the destruction of the ozone layer? How do you see that as consistent with a golden age and increased spirituality on the earth? No problem, said the guest. He said that we shouldn't worry about the destruction of the ozone layer, but actually it was a very good thing because purple was a very, very spiritual color. And that as the ozone layer disintegrated, it would increase the amount of ultraviolet radiation on the earth, and this in turn would increase the spirituality on the earth. Scouts Honor, this is what this hockey puck was saying on his show. And I'll say this, that this individual was right about one thing. If the ozone layer goes and we have no protection from the ultraviolet radiation, we're all going to be spirits. So that will increase the amount of spirituality on the earth. But going back to the thrust of the discussion, I think this unfortunate individual, and I wish I could say that there weren't a fair number of that type of individual around, that is an individual who not only has been convinced to keep sitting on the tack, he's bloody well going to spend his time convincing other people to sit on the tack as well. And I think that the New Age, some aspect of New Age religion clearly anticipate a pro-fascist, pro-corporatist, theocratic approach. Basically, if you are not drawn to reactionary Christianity or, say, reactionary Islam, you can be convinced by Guru Bhagwan Sri Panzerfuhrer to join the Holy Order of the Purple Beyond. And that is how they will convince you to sit on the tack. And Guru Panzerfuhrer will tell you, "Oh, no, do not worry. Do not worry at all. I know that it feels very bad sitting on the tack at first, but Krishna, in all of his wisdom, has developed many, many different kinds of pleasure on this earth. And this particular kind of pleasure that you're experiencing right now is a type of pleasure that we call pain, you see." So as we above spiritually, do not worry about this particular form of pleasure called pain, because Krishna has intended you to learn to love pain, and that way when you experience the higher forms of pleasure, the higher forms of pleasure beyond pain, then you will become even more highly evolved. And this is how you will make it to the 12th level of purple existence. Assuming that you meet the $500 fee, which I will collect from you at the intermission from my lecture. Thank you very much. And if that doesn't work, thank you. Does somebody want to collect my $500 fee, by the way? If that doesn't work, then I'll have Pastor Karl-Heinz Luftwaffe convince you that suffering is a blessing and we should all place our faith in Jesus, because sooner or later, we all are going to have to shuffle off this mortal coil, so let us not pay too much attention to our travails on this veil of tears. Yes, I know that life is hard, life is painful, but it has been ordained for us to experience the reality of Jesus on the cross. Though the passion that he must have felt as they drove those nails into his skin. We think we have suffering. All you have to do is sit on a little tack. Think about what our Lord, when our God gave up his only son, he had huge nails driven through his hands and a crown of thorns placed upon his head and a spear thrust into his side. And all we have to do is to sit on a small tack. Yes, we are blessed children. So let us pray. And while we are praying, I will pass around the collection plate, and please put your hard-earned wages into the collection plate so that we can all become tacky together. Okay? I'll tell you, I'm myself an agnostic. I can see certain aspects. I can see certain aspects of higher mathematics and physics that could indicate that there might be something beyond what is immediately evident. I don't worry about it, because we all get there sooner or later, some of us perhaps sooner than others. But I had the occasion to go to, I don't want to offend any individual's religious beliefs. I had the occasion to go to a former roommate's funeral late last year, and he basically placed all of his faith in vodka. That's basically what he believes in. Which is going to get us to something else, as we talk about mind control and the use of drugs and inebriants to get you to sit on the tack. Because if you don't get hoodwinked by Guru Bhagwan Sri Panzerfuhrer, or if you don't get inculcated by Pastor Karl-Heinz Luftwaffe, then basically, Brother Love on the corner is going to sell you a joint, a packet of heroin, a speedball or something like that, or else maybe just a gallon of, moonshine or whatever, and you just wipe yourself out, and you won't even feel the tack, so you'll stay seated on it because you're nodding out. But Jim was, shall we say, irreverent, he was irreverent about everything except vodka, and that was ultimately what killed him. It was kind of a sad situation. But at his funeral, first of all, his sister was an absolute nutcase born-again Christian, and she delivered this interminable eulogy over her brother, talking about, "Oh, how wonderful it was, because now Jim was with Jesus." If Jim had been there, he would have puked. He never would have liked this. He hated his sister, and the last thing he cared about was Jesus. But she went on and on. But it was a Catholic mass, and it's been a long time since I had seen the Catholic communion, and the priest went on and on, droning on and on in this monotone about how this becomes the blood of Jesus, and this becomes his body, and our brother Jim shall be sanctified. It goes on. It's basically this act of totem cannibalism. That was really quite horrifying. And I, ever the cynic, frankly, was having a hard time suppressing giggles in the very back row. I was hoping that people thought I was crying and that I was actually trying to cover up laughter. But finally, at the end, the guy concluded the communion by saying, "And we take it, and we eat it." And I dissolved. I just dissolved. I said, you got that right, pal. You know, you got at least that much right. And I ran out the back of the church and I roared like a big dog out in the parking lot for about 5 minutes. You know, you take it and you eat it. That is what is going to be happening under this fascist-oriented, technologically-based theocracy. You're going to take it and you're going to eat it. And you're going to like it, too. And the fact that you will be sitting on the tack while you are chewing will really be the point. Because, again, this conflict between the needs of the corporate state and the needs of the individual and the planet itself are in a state of fundamental conflict. I think the dominant power element of the world today is the transnational corporation. I think even the nation state itself is in a state of obsolescence. And one of the things that I think is going to be happening is that larger countries are going to be balkanized, that ethnicity is going to be deliberately heightened so that peoples, first of all, they quarrel with each other and blame each other for the problems which in fact will be created by the corporate state. Here we're seeing people of color, for example, poor people and minorities being scapegoated for America's economic problems. Hence the code word that really lies behind the call to reduce government spending. They're not talking about holding down government spending. It basically is a racist battle cry. It means let's get those niggers and Mexicans who are spending our hard-earned tax dollars on their welfare. That is not what's caused America's problems. Not poor people, not people of color, but rather the corporate state. But people are going to be, since people are going to have to be convinced to sit on the tack, they will also be convinced that in fact the pain is not coming from that tack which is stuck in their rear end, but it's coming from the person in the seat behind them who is stabbing them. And so that if they want to cure their problems, they can turn around and stab the person in the seat behind them, and then they won't feel that pain. That's another way in which people are going to have to be, they are already being convinced to sit on the tack. I think that ethnicity will also be used to break up larger nation states to create less powerful and potentially less effective entities. Because the smaller a country is, the less powerful, the smaller a country is, the less powerful it is, and the less capable it will be of resisting some of these huge transnational corporations. I think that's another pattern that we will be seeing in the future. I think that technology itself will be utilized in combination with religion and totalitarianism to produce a number of effects that I'm going to be talking about in the second part of the discussion this evening. So one more thing I want to touch on, and I've already touched on it in the discussion, that is another thing that is going to be used to convince people to sit on the tack, something that will be used to get them to adjust the conflict between the reality principle and the pleasure principle in such a way as to suit the needs of the corporate state. Remember, if you're sitting on a tack, the pleasure principle is going to drive you to get up off the tack because it hurts. Now, you can do that in a couple of ways. You can resolve that pain either by getting up off the tack or by somehow altering your internal environment in such a way as the pain no longer is perceptible to you. I've already cited some of the ways that can be done. Or in the case of intimidation, even though the pain may be perceptible, you will be convinced that you could experience a worse pain, so don't worry about that. Another way, of course, is to get people to literally submit themselves to narcosis. There is substantive evidence, overwhelming evidence, in fact, that to a considerable extent the, quote, drug problem, unquote, in this country and in other countries is being, if not deliberately created, at least actively aided and abetted by elements of the intelligence services and the national security establishment, which also are being employed in a law enforcement capacity to help to combat that very drug problem. There is substantive evidence that cocaine, heroin, and other forms of inebriants are being deliberately introduced into elements, into areas of American society, in particular inner city neighborhoods and neighborhoods inhabited by people of color, not only in order to help fund corporations in the foreign policy sphere, but also to basically keep the people in those neighborhoods and in those mini societies, so to speak, in a state of narcosis, to keep them drugged up, literally morphined out in such a way as they can endure that pain. Again, if you've been swilling vodka like my late ex-roommate, or if you've been shooting heroin or snorting cocaine or whatever, that's another way to get people to sit on the tack. Basically, when you're knotted over like this, you're not worried about the pain that you would be experienced by sitting on that tack. because you're no longer conscious of the pain. Your central nervous system has been so chemically altered that you're no longer experiencing the receptors, the pain signals from your central nervous system. And that's another way to get people to sit on the tack, is to drug them out. One of the very first things that the Nazis would do, for example, upon occupying a country, is to drastically increase the price of food, but to hold the price of liquor roughly stable, so that it actually became a cheaper way for people who were poor to gain their calories by drinking beer or some other form of alcohol, rather than by going out and buying bread. So that way, they at least were able to sustain themselves in a certain minimal sense by putting enough calories into themselves to keep going, at the same time as they were much less inclined to political activism and organization and resistance, because they were teetering down the street after drinking their dinner instead of eating it. By the way, what time is it now?
8:30.
Would people like to take a break now? Because we're definitely going to have time. How many for a break now? Well, I think it's probably just over half. Why don't we take a short break now, and then I'll finish the second half of the lecture. We'll then have a short break before a question and answer session. But remember what we've heard so far, because so far they've been quite adept at getting people to sit on the tack. What we're going to talk about in the second part of the lecture is how, as the world turns, so to speak, how they're going to get people to sit on the tack when the tack becomes longer and sharper and more painful, because that's what it's going to do. Take a break, maybe 10 minutes or so, and then we'll continue with the discussion. If I could have your attention, time is marching on, and I'd like to put a wrap on the main part of the lecture so we have time for questions. Where I think things are going, as I indicated in the first part of the lecture, is I think can be deduced, at least to a certain extent, from where we are now and where things have been going in the past. I think that with an ecosystem that is disintegrating, and with, as I said, a fundamental conflict between the needs of the corporate state and the needs of the earth itself and the needs of the individual. By the way, this is not to diss private enterprise, so to speak. I think private enterprise works about 90% of the time, but it's that other 10% that gets out of control and results in corporatism or fascism. I think any form, the nature of the human animal is such that any form of unbalanced power will be abused. I think that's the nature of the human animal, and it can happen under socialism. As it happens, the system that has evolved as the dominant social system is industrial capitalism, and there has been no effective check provided for on either the power of the transnational corporations or the power of the U.S. or in other major countries' national security establishments. I think as the Earth itself disintegrates, as the ozone layer disintegrates, as global warming, the destruction of the rainforest, the pollution of the oceans, the pollution of the air, the pollution of the streams, the poisoning of the food chain itself, as these things progress and make life increasingly unhealthy for human beings on the earth, as the number of human beings increases and as the concentration of wealth increases, the misery for the individual human being is going to increase. Therefore, in order to realize its goals, the corporate state in the future is going to have to devise methods of maintaining social control. Now, one of the things that is going to happen is that the conflict, the law of supply and demand, in effect, will be brought into play. When you have far too many people for the number of jobs that are available, and again, as with the first part of the lecture, there are times in this lecture when I'm going to have to gloss over very complicated subjects relatively quickly, and it'll perhaps seem a little bit facile. In order to maximize profits, wages and benefits will be held down. The more people you have competing for any given job opening, the lower will be the wage and the greater the profit, because sooner or later they're going to get somebody to work that job for a low wage. The larger the number of people demanding jobs and the fewer jobs that there will be, relatively speaking, will result in an adjustment of the marketplace with regard to labor in accordance with the law of supply and demand. I do not expect industrial expansion to take place and provide jobs for whom there are no jobs. Rather, I think those people who are deemed extra, those people who will no longer be central to either the production and or consumption phases of economic life, will be disposed of. I think that we are already seeing the beginning of this, and that is AIDS. Again, this is going to seem perhaps a bit crazy to people who are new to my work. I've done a lot of work in the past, specifically in Radio Free America program number 16, indicating that AIDS is not a naturally occurring disease, but rather represents the application of genetic engineering to the art or science, if one could call it that, of biological warfare. I think that excess population will be eliminated. I think various forms of technology and deception will be utilized. I think we are already seeing the beginnings of that with euthanasia, with the push to euthanasia. And I think that in a very real sense, if we take the Deborah Saunders column with which I began the lecture, and if we apply a larger meaning to the word taxes, meaning not specifically taxes, but rather social spending, the safety net, so to speak, that we all think about, then the death will indeed be presented as the alternative to taxes. The human animal is going to become more difficult to control as the conditions under which they are expected to live become harsher. In effect, basically, the tack that people will be asked to sit on is going to become sharper and longer and more difficult to endure. So as a result, the corporate state is going to have to devise more inventive and more effective ways of getting people to sit on the tack. One of the things that I see playing a large role in the corporate state of the future is technology. I think various forms of technology are going to be used in combination with each other. They will be used to eliminate people who are deemed undesirable, either people who are excess workers, i.e. unemployable, excess consumers, i.e. the homeless that the Mensa newsletter is already advocating be disposed of, or people who are rebellious, people who insist on trying to get up off of that tack that they're supposed to sit on, or even worse, who are going to inform other people that they don't have to sit on that tack, or try to organize other people in such a way as to get them all to get up off of the tack. That will be the greatest danger of all, and I think a variety of things will be used to counteract that. Various forms of coercion have already been used. Deception and propaganda from the media, the educational system, existing religions, those are already being used. I think they will be used in the future. Intimidation is already being used. It will be used in the future. People who get in the way will be assassinated. Whole groups of people who get in the way will be coerced or deceived if possible, co-opted if possible, or eliminated if not possible. I think that the ultimate denial of the pleasure and reality principles will be to get people to do what in effect, what in reality is unpleasant by confusing and coercing them in such a way as to get them to experience the world in a very different fashion from the way the world actually exists. I've spoken in a number of archive shows about mind control, and by mind control I don't mean mass propaganda or mass deception. That is a form of controlling the human mind, but when I speak about mind control, I'm talking about the actual physical interference with the individual human intellect and perceptual system through the use of psychosurgery, hypnosis, classical and operant conditioning, and various other psychopharmacology and newer technologies.